Good morning, Mike Broomhead.
Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good weekend?
Yeah, you know, it was really cool, Mike, because I went down to my mom lives in Green Valley. Went down there. My sister and I went to celebrate her birthday with her. And we ended up taking a drive on Saturday down to Tubac, all the way around through Patagonia, Elgin, went to a great brewery, up through to the Nogales Highway. It was gorgeous. It was really windy, but what a beautiful part of Arizona.
That's awesome. Yeah, all those drives in the very rural parts of Arizona are just
Rio
amazing.
Rico, that whole area.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Gorgeous.
That's awesome. Well, good for you. I'm glad you got re-energized this weekend.
I highly recommend it.
Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate it. Hey, Julie, I got a question. Can you jump in real quick? I got a question for you. I have to ask this because you're normally on top of things. You're normally Johnny on the spot with things. So I think you made a mistake this morning before we get started. I hate calling you out on the air, but I didn't get the read sheets that said we're giving away Suns tickets this week for the home Suns game.
Did I mess up? Or did the Suns mess up? Did they mess that one up for us?
Yeah. By the way, Julie is the resident super fan of sports, and she was the one that was the Debbie Downer all week. They're going to lose in four. They're going to get swept.
I mean, I hate to be that person, but I was kind of right.
You can't say I hate to be that kind of person with that kind of smile on your face. It ruins it.
Everyone around here was so upbeat about them. And 2 weeks ago, they lost to the Clippers. Well, they didn't lose, technically. They were losing to the Clippers' third stringers by like 25-plus points. They came back and they won that game, but that should have told you everything you needed to know.
Listen, and you know I'm a Suns fan, too, like everybody else. But if you don't have a little fun with it, you might as well laugh it off because it's going to be a long off season.
For them, yeah.
So do they get rid of a player first or the head coach first? Which goes first?
I mean, they already got rid of their young core, so I guess they did that first. They should probably take the coach out.
No, I mean now. Now that it's done.
Coach, yeah.
Now the season's over, you think Vogel's gone first?
Yeah.
Me too.
For sure.
Me too. All right, thanks, Julie. Sorry, everyone. I just thought I'd get it out there and out of the way. Suns fans, it's always next year. But it seems like for Arizona fans, it's always, always next year. Thanks for being here this morning. We're going to start off in a different place. Over the weekend, I've been following this story. ASU police made 72 arrests after pro-Palestinian protesters set up tents on the Tempe campus. There are a couple of things about this that ASU is saying, and I think it's legitimate. I think we need to continue to talk about it. A lot of the people on this campus doing this were not students at ASU. Now, ASU is an open campus. I like that it's an open campus. I like that you can drive through campus. I'm not saying they should change it. But when you have people infiltrating the campus, using a campus for a college protest, there were some students that got involved. But when you've got people that have no business on that campus going there to cause trouble, I'm glad the police arrested them. When you look at what's happened at Columbia University and other places, forget your political investments, forget your political leanings, forget what you think about things for a moment. They have a right to protest. And I've been very consistent about people's right to speak up. I have had people on that I've completely disagreed with. And I've said, I think you have an absolute right to protest. I even said the people in Phoenix that were a part of the Defund the Police protests did it the right way. They worked with the PD to get rid of the violence inside of those protests to make sure that the peaceful protesters' voices could be heard. There was even a time when the police were there and they worked together to make sure that the agitators were the ones that were pushed out. They worked in the right way. I gave them a lot of credit. I did not agree with the Defund the Police movement. I didn't agree with the premise of what they were trying to accomplish, but I absolutely defended their right to protest. I don't agree at all with what's going on. Sorry about that. What we ended up having that was going on was people at ASU coming on campus that were not students at ASU. ASU moved in and said, you can't protest here. This place is off limits. You're going to be charged with trespassing. If people don't leave, we will remove you. You will be arrested. And they arrested him. So now what happens? You look at Columbia University and the agitator at Columbia University, the guy in charge of this whole thing, was in, there was a Teams meeting or some kind of a Zoom meeting with this guy that made death threats that said Zionists don't have a right, do not have a right to live. It's an outrageous thing to say. It is an absolutely outrageous thing to say. And when you look at, when you listen to all of this, the issue with it more than anything else is the fact that you have people coming on campus that don't belong there. People are not obeying the rules. And if you're doing it the right way, even though I think it's ridiculous, you have a right to do it. This problem was nipped in the bud by leadership at ASU. They've handled this the right way in the past. If you remember, they had an area that was, it was a place on campus for people to feel safe. And it was a diversity. I can't remember what the name of this place was on campus, but there were a couple of white students that were being harassed by a couple of black students saying whiteness isn't a culture. And they were offended and told these white students they didn't belong there. And so obviously with the racial divide in some places, ASU stepped in and said, you're going to apologize to these white students because this place is open to everyone. That's the point of it. It is open for everyone. So ASU has done a very good job of walking that line, protecting free speech, allowing for voices. But if you're going to make threats, you're going to be removed. They had death threats at Columbia. The head of the protest at Columbia, the person that was in charge of all of this, made statements of killing Zionists, that they don't deserve to live, and defended it. Defended it in this Zoom meeting before finally he was thrown off campus. But in the meantime, if you look at what's happening, there's a big difference between saying you can't say that here because we don't like what you're saying and saying we have rules on campus you have to obey. You can't disrupt things on campus, and that's what people are doing. But when you find out that it is not acceptable, when you realize it won't be tolerated, and let's be honest, even Bill Maher is talking about this. This is the self-indulgence that happens with these things. There are people that have given their lives to a cause, to what they believe in, and they're to be honored for that, even if you disagree with them. If you look at people that were marching in the Defund the Police movement, you go back to the civil rights activists back in the 1960s, you look at people that are marching for a cause versus the people that are there just to be agitators. I'll give you a couple of examples. When you look at the climate protesters, again, I don't believe in the politics of climate change. We could get into that another day. But the climate protesters that decide they're going to go into an art museum and try to deface art that is hundreds of years old, sometimes more than that, and deface it and destroy it, and then glue themselves to the floor. They're doing nothing to move forward with their movement. If you're going to block traffic, if you're going to lay in the street, you're not doing anything to have anyone believe in your movement. No one is looking at you and saying, there's a group of people that are trying to win over hearts and minds. What you end up with is a bunch of self-indulgent, self-serving people that alienate people more than anything else. That's what's funny about it. If you are somebody that believes in the plight of the Palestinian people, if you believe that what's happening in Gaza is a horrible thing, you should be the angriest at these protesters. They're not bringing attention to the cause. They're bringing attention to themselves. This is a self-indulgent moment. And then the part of it where they're not even students on campus, that are people that are showing up there because they can believe that they can bring this, the college students are an easy mark to bring them into their protests, is insulting to the college students on ASU's campus. And it should make people concerned, because it's one of the reasons why some colleges close their campuses. It is offensive. I just thought it was a horrible thing to do all the way around. Congratulations to ASU and the way they handled things. I thought they handled it the right way. They weren't violent in their response. They were stern in their response. They remained steadfast in their response. And they said, you can't do that here. You don't belong here. You're going to be arrested. So 72 people got arrested for what they did, and they should have been arrested for what they did. What we'll do in a moment is we'll talk about the economy. There is a new study out that's talking about what the U.S. economy, or where it's headed. And it's a scary proposition for some. We'll talk about that coming up here in just a moment.
Stop. strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Quite possibly your most clever move. Quite possibly your most clever move is a rejoinder. Suns fans, Hungry Like the Wolf is quite possibly the biggest poke in the eye you've ever done subtly. Great job. All right, thanks for being here. We have got to talk about the U.S. economy. I've been talking about this for a long time. I don't mean to be redundant, but I know I do mean to be redundant. I think this is something that is should be front and center to all Americans. I was a young boy in the 1970s when Jimmy Carter was president. Inflation was out of control. There was something called stagflation, which we'll get into in a minute. And the American economy was in a very bad place. Ronald Reagan got elected in 1980. He became president in January of 1981. It took quite a while to turn things around, but the turnaround in the American economy was evident. Now, you're going to hear people that, for whatever reason, say that that's not the case. But the fact of the matter is Ronald Reagan won 49 states for re-election. When the American people were able to take a deep breath from that, they saw things turn. That doesn't mean that the nation turned Republican. This is where we've gotten to this point where the extremes in both parties run things their way, and they think their way is the only way. And therefore, it's always about Republican, Republican. Republican, Democrat, Democrat, Democrat. There's not right and left always. Sometimes it's right and wrong. And what's going on is wrong. Listen to this headline. This is America will be left with severe, irreversible scars if the national debt goes unchecked. A blockbuster report warns the bill is higher than believed, that our national debt is on pace to hit $141 trillion in 30 years. Now, 30 years seems like a long time, and it is a long time. But if you think about your life, 30 years ago, where were you? And it seems like it's been a flash. I moved here 29 years ago, 30 years ago. It's gone by quickly. So according to this report, national debt is fast becoming the thorn in the side of the American economy that nobody wants to extract, and will continue to cause damage, sending the U.S. into financial crisis and 10 years of stagnation. So we have got to figure out what to do with this. We're looking at all of the things, and this is where you have to prioritize. Every business has gone through this, I think. Every individual at some point has gone through it. Sometimes you have to restructure. I don't know if you've ever filed bankruptcy. I haven't, but I've been in a place where I thought I might. Whether it's a business mistake or whatever it is, when you are underwater financially, what is reckless about this, what is obscene about this to me, is we are still the world's wealthiest economy. And we are spending more than we have. There isn't even the political argument of what we cut. Nobody's even talking about cutting anything. Mounting evidence is pointing to a nightmare scenario for the U.S. economy. This is alluding to this report. The economic growth measure just at 1.6 for the first quarter, following a report persistently high inflation in March of 3.5% year over year. The combination of both low growth and high inflation in conjunction with continuously high amounts of government spending and debt has led to signs of stagflation in the U.S. economy, which wreaked havoc on the U.S. consumers in the 1970s, according to experts. I'm going to read just a little bit more, and I hate reading, but I'm sorry. It's not so much that we risk stagflation as we're already there. This is a research fellow at the Heritage Foundation. We have basically pulled forward trillions of dollars of economic growth by borrowing from the future, but that must be repaid at some point, and it is highly inefficient as well. So here's another one, this one from another business website, this from Fox Business. The U.S. economy could be headed toward stagflation in this scenario. Some Wall Street strategists are growing concerned could be headed toward the 70s-style stagflation scenario amid recent signs of stubbornly high inflation and a cooling economy. So when you look at these happening, when you look at what's being done, it is government involvement that seems to be the deal breaker, and government getting out of the way that is a deal maker. I am a believer in the U.S. individual, whether it is a person with a dream that says, you know, I want to be an entrepreneur and I'm going to blaze my own trail. I think it's because of the world that I've come from. In the construction world, you learn a trade from the ground up. There are trade schools you can go to, and I recommend you go get the basics. But you learn on the job. If you're fortunate enough in whatever trade you're in, you work for a journeyman that's a teacher. You work for journeymen that are teachers that will show you the way to do things. And then you figure out your best way to do those. When you go into project management, and there is a big, big skill set in being a project manager and managing it the right way with both labor and material, navigating the other trades on the job to make sure you're as efficient as you can be and reliable and working with other people. It is a skill set that if you are good at it, you can write your own ticket. But when you become a project manager and an estimator where you are able to estimate work on your own, I was just with a friend of mine this weekend that is a very successful businessman. And he's been in business for over about 30 years, probably longer than that. Definitely more than that. And I think probably closer to 40 years. And he is gotten his company to the point where he estimates the jobs, he manages the jobs to a certain extent. He has gotten lean and mean in his office, and he runs the show because he has found himself and grown into being an expert in all of those facets. And he's immensely successful. And he was a guy that wore tools just like I did. And to see him as successful as he is now in his early 60s, mid-60s, and to look at him be successful, I'm proud of him. And there are people that demonize that kind of success. Those are the entrepreneurs that know how to navigate the world of money and business. We should be turning the American economy over to people like that before we turn them over to bureaucrats and politicians that are leading us down the wrong road. There is a balance, but the balance should be tipped to the entrepreneurs. That's just my opinion. In a moment, Gatos joins me. It's our Big Q poll question of the day. I hope you'll stick around for it.
The Gatos Big Q poll question, brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers.
Well, welcome back, Gatos.
Is it fantastic to have you back on the show?
It is. I missed you all week. I got to tell you something, though. Julia did a stellar job with the question while you were gone.
I hear I could be replaced very quickly.
I think she's proving more and more that we both could be replaced very easily. So
I think that's probably the case. Yes.
But
no, I caught some of the questions. I thought she did a great job. Absolutely.
She did. So you were in D.C. Did you straighten things out while you were there?
And I did not, but I did go to D.C. I got a good story today. I bumped into a very high profile politician.
Really? Are
you in the strangest place you could ever imagine? I'm going to tell the story today.
You're saving it.
I'm going to save it.
Okay. When I was a go ahead.
I gotta get some ratings too, man. Come on.
when I was a little boy, I got invited to Jimmy Carter's inauguration when I was 9. So my parents took me, and we were walking in the Senate office buildings getting autographed. I got John Glenn's autograph because he was the Ohio senator. I was living in Ohio. We were waiting for an elevator, and I was a little kid. I didn't know protocol. The doors open. I went to walk on the elevator instead of waiting for people to get off, and this guy knocked me down. I mean, flat on my back, knocked me down. And, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. He helped me up. I got up. We get in the elevator. Ted Kennedy.
Get out of here.
Yeah. I was 9. I had no idea who he was. My parents looked like they had just met Elvis.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Was he drunk when he knocked you down?
Yeah, at least I didn't get a ride in his car.
Oh God, jeez.
All right. What do you got for a question?
Well, we were pulling in last night and caught the last few minutes of the Suns. Suns got swept in the first round of the playoffs. What word best describes their 2024 season? A, woof. B, disheartening. C, miserable. D, hot garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Or E, all of the above, plus horrible, disgusting, and yucky. I forgot the one word that we probably should have put in there.
Okay.
Broken.
Yeah. I'll go along
with
that.
This is a broken team, and they need to figure something out because this season was probably the worst I've ever seen in my 30 years in Arizona.
This was as bad as it gets. Yeah, I agree with you with the expectation of that team. It's a great question. Listen, I am glad you're back, and I will talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Thanks, Gato. Sorry, the Big Q poll question of the day is brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers. We talk abortion next.